I think we all pretty much know what Tetzav is all about. You finish with Truma and you get down all the different kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, and then you all of a sudden get to the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. It's just strange because the beginning of the parsha doesn't start off like any other part of the parsha, and the wording is so much different. Plus, it goes on to something entirely different. The Atzat Tetzav is Bnei Yisrael. You command Bnei Yisrael, like you Moshe Rabbeinu. We have a parsha that starts off with a command. It's Tetzav as Bnei Yisrael. Right? Zalmatolim as Korbani Lachmi Lishai. Parsha Tetzav. Here, parsha Tetzav is weird because it includes Moshe Rabbeinu within the thing, but it doesn't mention Moshe Rabbeinu's name. It's Atzat Tetzav as Bnei Yisrael. It's clearly talking about Moshe. You should. But it doesn't mention it with Moshe Rabbeinu's name. And then what does it talk about? It doesn't talk about getting all the stuff that's needed for the big day Kuna Gedola. It doesn't talk about that at all. It says, gather for yourself a pure olive oil, kasi samor, that will be crushed for lighting, lahalos ner tavan, in order to bring up the lights of the menorah. It should be in the Ol Moed, right outside the Parochas, right where the Edus is, where the Torah is put inside the Aron Kodesh. That's where they should light it up. It should be done with Dorosam. And then the Atal Kreger Lechas Aaron Achichav as Banavito and Tobin Israel Bachanoli. You should have the Kohanim, and you have to make big day Kodesh for Aaron Achichav a couple of Sifaris. No need to really, there's no need for the menorah over here. The process of lighting up the menorah really belongs in Parshas Truma. It really doesn't belong over here, but actually, it doesn't even belong in Truma. It's not even consecration time. If you're going to talk about the menorah, talk about it when they actually made the menorah. The command to light up the menorah does not seemingly belong in the beginning of Parshas Tetzaveh, aside from the fact that the whole Lashon is off, that there's no Vayidaber Hashem or Moshe Lehem or anything like that. Does anybody know what the last prophet's name was? The last official prophet of Klal Yisrael, the last one who spoke about anything in Klal Yisrael. Strange. Does anybody know what his name is? That's right. It's Malachi. Very, very good. Chagai Zechariah Malachi. Malachi is supposed to be the one. It's a question whether Malachi was considered Ezra or not. Malachi may have been considered Ezra, but Malachi is considered the absolute last of the Nevi'im. He is considered the last of the Nevi'im. He ends his sefer with a famous line. Zichru Teres Moshe Avdi. Remember the Torah of Moshe, my servant. That's how he ends off the entire sefer. What's going on, guys? But Zichru Teres Moshe Avdi. Why? Because no prophets were ever given permission to add on anything to the Torah. Neither could they subtract anything from the Torah. When all the Nevi'im came along, all they were allowed to do, instead of adding on or subtracting from a mitzvah, all they were allowed to do is make something called Gedarim and Siyagim. We all know what a getter is and a siyug. Getter and a siyug are fences that keep the Torah inside. The famous mushel that's given by the Michas Yud is a very, very good one, by the way. He says that a guy goes to a doctor, right? He goes up to a doctor and the doctor says to him, listen, you want to get better, the only way you're going to get better is if you take these pills right over here, okay? And he puts them in his hands, there's 30 pills altogether. Now listen to me, he said, the doctor said, you cannot do anything but what I tell you. You have to take two pills on Sunday, one pill on Monday, two pills on Tuesday, one pill on Wednesday. And if you don't do it, then you're never going to get better. If you don't do exactly as I tell you to do it, you're not going to get any better. So the guy gets home, takes those pills, and he puts them inside a little bottle. Puts them inside a bottle, right? So a guy saw him, a guy was with him the entire time, another person, comes over to the sick person and says, what are you doing? The doctor said, do exactly as he says. He didn't say to put them in a bottle. So the sick person says, you fool. The only reason why I'm putting them in a bottle is because I'm going to lose them if I'm carrying them around in my hand the whole time. Like, I can't just hold them in my hand the whole time the entire way through. The doctor understands that you got to have a bottle to carry them in, so I just put them in a bottle to make it easier for me to carry around, so there's nothing wrong. But that's not going against the rules that the doctor told me in the first place. Does anybody get the muscle?
Nope.
That's somewhat obvious. It wasn't obvious enough. The doctor is a Kaddish Baruch Hu.
Yeah.
Right? That's there. Yeah. The man is a Jew. The mitzvos are the little pills, and the gedarim, the siyagim, the ideas of the Rabbanan, the gezeiros of the Rabbanan, is that bottle. Everybody get it? Now everybody got it. The point of the gedarim and siyagim, every gedar that you see throughout Chazal, whenever there's a gezeirah, and they get around there, mukta, for example, it's not to make your life more miserable than it already is. That's not the point of it. The point of mukta is to be able to say to yourself, you need a bottle. Because if you were carrying around a hammer all day, and you were just walking around carrying a hammer wherever you went, eventually you'd start hitting nails. It's just what happens when a guy is given a hammer. Maybe not when a girl gets a hammer, but when a guy gets a hammer, you take that hammer, you start banging on things in the wall. You carry around an electric drill, right? I don't care how many times you say to yourself, I'm not going to press it. Eventually, you're going to do it. It doesn't matter how hard you try. That's just a fact of life. That is called a geder. That is the bottle that goes around it. And that's what Chazal meant by it. They wanted to make you be able to keep the Torah better, in a better way. They never did anything which they're adding on, which would subtract from what the mitzvahs were about. They were trying to add on to help keep the mitzvahs as they are. We know that the menorah represents the Torah itself. In fact, if a person wants to daven Shemone Esrei correctly, there are two ways of davening. Obviously, straightforward to the east, to where the Aron Kodesh is the obvious way, right? But there's two other ways. If a person wants to become smarter, if a person wants to become wiser, he should turn his body a little bit toward the south. A little bit toward the south. And this shul, for example, would be a little bit that way, right? That's automatic. If it's automatic, you got to put your right hand over your left hand with your thumbs inside. That's the Mitzadiyeh and the Mishnah Berurah, right? Brings down, you got to put it on top of your head. That's there, right? But to the right, you daven just to the right, just a little bit. If you want to daven and you want parnasa, for a little bit of parnasa, for a little bit more money, you daven a little bit more to the north. You're facing the east, facing the Aron Kodesh, but you daven a little bit, facing a little bit to the north. You'll see some people that are davening that way. I always felt, by the way, okay? When I was in the Mir Yeshiva, I always thought that everybody was davening for Chochmah. Because everybody was standing toward the Aron Kodesh, but they were all facing the other way. Everybody was facing to the right-hand side. So I was always so shocked. I'm like, wow, everybody's really mekayim this, and everybody's davening to the right-hand side. Then I found out the reason why they daven that way is not necessarily for Chochmah. It's because the Aron Kodesh was made not exactly toward the Kodesh HaKadosh. if you face straight in the Mir Yeshiva, you're really davening to the Palestinians. If you daven a little bit to that way, then you're davening toward the old city and toward the wall. That's what you're supposed to do, and that's the reason why they daven that way. So it turned out that way, but it happened to me, that's what a person's supposed to do. So here's the idea. You're davening to the south because the menorah was in the south. The shulchan, which is for parnasa, that's the bread, that was in the north. So you daven a little bit to the south. Here's the pshat. He was told, you, Moshe, titzaves b'nei Yisrael. Teach b'nei Yisrael, yichuei lecha shemen zayzach, take some pure olive oil. Fill up the menorah with it. In other words, the menorah represents the Torah, but the olive oil is what makes it work. The menorah in and of itself is just a beautiful gold vessel. You want to make something be lit up. You want something from it. You want lahalos ner tamid to always keep the mitzvos and do everything correct. Then you need to pour in a little bit of oil. And that oil are the gedarim and the siyagim of the Torah, the things that keep them that way. That's the idea behind it. And that's what it means by lahalos ner tamid. What's this doing in the beginning of the parsha? It's a great remez. But what's it doing here? Everybody always wonders. Why were the Kohanim chosen? I'm a Bechor. Anybody else here a Bechor? Right here? Me and you, Bruce. Oh, we're good. We got like five. Yeah, that's a lie. That is a complete lie. We got four guys over here. Stop it. That right there, a Bechor should have been the Kohen, should have been the one in charge, should have been the guy who was it. This is the guy there. But the Kohanim took it over. Why the Kohanim? The Kohanim were special. They made for themselves Gidarim and Siyagim. When they were in Mitzrayim, they made it for themselves. They continued to give themselves Bris Milas, which were pure mitzvahs, and they learned in the base measures, but they made for themselves Gidarim and Siyagim. We're not Zohar to know what they did, but they kept themselves from doing other things, and they were constantly on the watch for Avodas Hashem, what they could do in their Avodah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because of that, that's why they're chosen. That's why they get Big Day Kahuna. That's why they're more special than anybody else. And the greatest gozer, I guess you could say, the person who made the most Gedarim and Siyagim was Aaron HaKohen. And that's what gave him the ability to have the 8 Big Day Kahuna Gedolah. He reached great spiritual heights because of it. So at the beginning of the parsha, when you're talking about the Kohanim, we start off with the menorah, which represents the Torah, and we say, put oil in it, fence up for yourself with the Torah so you understand and you know what to do with it, and by doing that, then you'll be zocher to your own Big Day Kahuna. Maybe it won't be as cool, maybe it won't look like that, right? But there's still going to be something. There's going to be something that you'll be able to get out of it. That's the idea behind it. Chassam Sofer has another idea, but he based on the same basic questions, okay? Question number one, why titzaveh? You will command, and why not just say tzav? It's B'nai Yisrael. Why not just say that? Why is it Titzaveh? That's question number one. Number two, the Yikru Eilecha, take to you. Sounds like Moshe Rabbeinu is taking it for himself. Why is it for himself? Why is that the purpose over here? It should be the Yikru. Just take the oil and put it in the menorah. That's number two. And number three, what in the world does Lahalos Ner Tamid mean? And why is that being brought up right now? That Lahalos Ner Tamid is if the mitzvah is right there. So again, the same basic three questions, but it's over there. And I don't know if you have kids, and if you do and you're not supposed to, then don't tell me. But if you do have kids, it happens to be that although you somewhat live vicariously through your kids, you really want your kids to be better than you. You don't want your kids to be at a lower level than you are. You look at your kids and you see them and you just say, like, I want this kid to be greater than me in everything. Greater than me in everything. In everything that I can do, I want him to be better than me. Unless you're a real masochist, then possibly you don't. But most people want their kids to be better than them in everything. Whether it comes to learning Torah, whether it comes to sports, whether it comes to everything in life. Just everything. My kid should be greater than me. And that really is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's desire. His desire is for future, all the future generations to be greater than the previous ones. Unfortunately, we have Yerida Tadoros, and it doesn't always work out that way, but the children should be like Malachim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu that bracha. He said, Yosef Kochem Aleichem, Elef Pa'amim Yishev, 1,000 times, it's not only 1,000 times greater quantity-wise, it's 1,000 times greater quality-wise, that the children should be greater children, and Moshe Rabbeinu was blessing Bnei Yisrael that way, that everybody should be the way. Ve'itivcha, he made you great, said Moshe, Ve'hirvecha me'avosecha, and he made you even more, increasingly more than your fathers. Avadim that deals with numbers, that the numbers of 3 avos versus 600,000 Jews is obviously more than what they had before, that's for sure, but it's even qualitatively true that we should become greater, and even though we haven't accomplished that yet, that's the bracha, we want to be that way. That's the idea of the Ner Tamid. A Ner Tamid is to be continuously in growth mode. To always be growing and always move yourself up no matter what. That's the idea. Says the Chasam Sofer, now you can understand a Medrash. The Torah says over here that we're compared to all olives. Why are we compared to olives? Here's the idea. Olives cannot have harkava. Now, I'm not a big... I know I look like a... Oh, what are they called? Horticologist? Is that what they call it?
Horticulturalist.
That's what it is. I know I look like a horticulturalist. I know it looks like I have green thumbs, but I really don't. I really don't, and I'm sorry. It's really not there. I'm really actually pretty good at killing plants more than I am at growing them. I've been very successful in doing stuff like that. But apparently olives have no such thing as harkava, which means mixing them together, right? Making a... It's not even I don't even know what to call it, really. A kilayim with olives. It should be almost impossible. Apparently it's that way. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. Maybe there are different types of olives. I have absolutely no clue. But apparently, look, you take an olive and you try growing it together with a pear or an apple or something like that. Harkava, it just doesn't mix. It just doesn't mix. And that's supposed to be us as well. Bnei Yisrael do not have our kava. What that means is we cannot mix in with the other nations of the world. We can never mix in with them. Once we mix in, bad things happen. Bad things happen. But we say elsewhere, v'nivruchu becha kol mishpachos ha'adama, that the other, all the families of the ground will all be blessed through you. Meaning there's a connection between us and the other people in the world. Us and the other nations are supposed to have some type of a connection. So I don't understand. You know what's funny about this? There's another thing called havracha. Havracha is grafting. Grafting, taking a branch of a tree and putting it in another tree. And you can do that. That havracha applies to us because we have gerim. So understand, what's the difference between morkav, and havracha? That grafting is mutter by us, and we're okay with grafting, but it's also for us to mix. What does that mean, that there's a difference between the two? So here, this only the Chasam Sofer can come up with something like this, because only the Chasam Sofer. I'm sorry?
Grafting works only with the same species? Or?
Grafting apparently works with others. Apparently works with other things, but apparently that's like our bracha. Our bracha is v'nivruchu becha, that there should be havracha between us, and we should have gerim. That's what it seems to be. So what's the difference? So here we go. Havracha. Harkava is mixing an esrog and a lemon. Okay, this is the reason why when you search on Sukkot and you go find that esrog, and one of the esrogs is, you know, like an esrog and a lemon, you see like those really good looking esrogans, but they're like really round and really smooth, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is like the best esrog ever. The reason why is because that's a lemon. they grafted it with lemon trees, and that's what they look like. They look beautiful, and you gotta look out for those, because unfortunately, if you don't have a heksher on the I know it sounds so strange, what do you need a heksher for, but if you don't have a heksher on the place that's growing that esrogim, if you don't trust the guy who's selling it to you, you've got a problem, because they're probably grafting them with others, because lemons look beautiful. Esrogim look like pieces of garbage. Unless you get really good and you daven really well in Tu Bishvat, you always have those little scratches. The reason why is because lemon trees don't have thorns on them. Esrog trees have thorns all over them. When you have thorns on a tree, now here you go guys, you have thorns on a tree with a really soft fruit. What ends up happening to those fruits? Obviously, the esrogim get scratched and everything. So what they do is they graft them so that there's less thorns, or that they're stronger skinned, so that way they look beautiful, and they come out, they look really good. So you got to be very careful when it comes to stuff like that. What that would mean by us would be we're taking combinations of midos. There's the Jewish midos and there's the non-Jewish midos. We can't take on the non-Jewish midos and bring it in for ourselves. We can't do that. You can't add on from their chokhmah and add it on to the Torah and say, here's how we can understand for a svara in the Torah. In fact, the more, I don't want to say this in a bad way, but the more goyish knowledge that you have, it detracts from the amount of knowledge that you have in the Torah. It detracts from that. I don't know who it was. There's a famous Hasidic Rebbe. This is a great, just unbelievable. The famous Hasidic Rebbe, and I think Rev Wolfson quotes it down, where a person went up to him and he said, I know French, I know English, I know Latin, I know Spanish, or whatever went through, right? And Rev Wolfson said, like, every language that is out there in the world has a bit of tuma inside it. There's a bit of tumult with that language. So what you're telling me is you're a murderer, you're a thief, you're an adulterer. That's what you're telling me by knowing all those languages. That's what you're trying to tell me with that. That's good. And Yosef Atzadik. And Yosef Atzadik as well. So that's 100% true. So what they say about Yosef Atzadik is that, remember, he said Yehosef, Edus Behosef Samo. And that's where it says they added on, hey, because who taught him that language? Gabriel. There are ways of learning the languages, Bikidusha. For example,
the language itself.
There you go. That's the point. It's not the language per se. It's the process of learning it. Meaning, you'll learn it with the dialogue. What I'm looking for over here with the culture that comes with the language. You're learning the language with the culture, right? And the first word that you need to know in Hebrew is probably Habibi or like Nu. That's it. But that's not the real language. Meaning, you want to know the language of Hebrew. That really there are words. There's a way of learning it Bikidusha and a way of learning it the other way. So I would assume that Sanhedrin did not go out to the other nations of the world in order to learn the languages. They learned the language somehow through a way of Kedusha, which might have been through a Mesorah of some way, in which they didn't know the pop culture, so to speak. They just knew the actual language. That would be the difference. Yeah. Yes,
so
might have. Yeah.
So, can you burn off other grace stuff like through like Kedusha means like a Jewish like?
100%. Remember, the Chassam Sofer was an expert in most things, and he wrote an encyclopedia. For some reason, we don't have it. And I don't know what happened to it.
That's
thing
whole
also,
Toma too.
But that's that. Well, that's what he's saying. Meaning, you can learn
but
it. But Kedusha.
I didn't learn it with Toma. I learned it.
Bikidusha, because you put it together. Yeah. You learn a Bikidusha. That's Bikidusha, and that's the idea behind it. You can learn a Bikidusha. Just what we're saying is that usually their Chokmah, meaning the Chokmah that they're using directly, you can't take that svar and use it. That's terrible, because an Esrog Hamurkav is puzzle. You put that together, that's going to be absolutely puzzle. However, Havracha. Within the seeds itself. That's what it refers to. Havracha is still possible. How does Havracha work? Let's go with Havracha as being, you're sticking the branches in the ground, and you can grow a brand new sapling. Okay, you take a branch, you stick it in the ground, yeah, you can still do that, cut the branch, and it starts growing up a brand new sapling. That is the idea of a ger. Now, what does that mean? The concept of sparks of Kedusha that every Jew has, which affects the nations around us and inspires them. They can form brand new trees. Not our trees mixing in with their trees. They have a brand new tree that grows up, and that's some like Ovadia Hanavi, or Rebbe Meir, or Rebbe Akiva, or Shmayan Avtalion, who all came from Gerim, those types of things can come in. A Yisro, a Rachav, those types of people. But you have to, it's got to be done through Havracha. That's the idea behind it. That's the Nivrucho B'chol Kol HaMishpachot Zanua, that if done correctly, that we're not adding up on us, just rather our Kedusha is rubbing off on them, and they decide that they want to come to us, rather than them convincing us, etc., then all of a sudden it becomes bigger. So Moshe Rabbeinu accepted the Erev Rav. Okay, among Klal Yisrael. He himself did it. He was told, Yichu Eilecha, you yourself, Moshe Benu, must take Shemen Zayizach. Shemen Zayizach. And understand that it's got to be pure olive oil for Klal Yisrael. That the svaros of Klal Yisrael cannot be affected by them. You can have your Kedusha affect them, but you can't allow their Tuma to affect you. Make them Kadosh and then go together with them, rather than allow them to mix in with Klal Yisrael right there. That's the idea of not affecting Kedushas Am Yisrael. That the Shemes of B'nai Yisrael would thus be unaffected. They'd be able to light and shine for many future generations, and the kids would be great. greater as time goes on. But unfortunately, when you take in the svaras of other nations and you add that onto the svaras that you have now, that affects the kids, and the kids do not become as great, and they won't be as holy as they are now. And that's the Chassam Sofer, how he says. He did not explain what he's doing in this week's parsha, but at least the svara as to what these psukim mean and why he was specifically to Moshe Rabbeinu to take in that Rav to be very careful with where they were. Okay, how did they get the big day kunin gadol, guys? How did they get it? Where did they get this clothing from?
Design.
But where'd they get the stuff from?
From the
wool. From the Nisim gave the stones, that's for sure true. The wool, where'd they get the wool from?
Bought it.
Technically from the Egyptians. From donations, right? They got them from donations. Secretly donations, meaning they took it from Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael took it from the Mitzrayim, right? And then they donated it to the Mishkan. Those were part of the 15 things that they donated in the beginning of Parshas Truma. And of those donations, those are the things that were used in order to make the big day kuna and the big day kuna gdola. So we have a major problem here. Major issue. The stones, as you just said, Shmuel, were stones of the Choshen that were brought down by clouds in front of the Nisim, that nobody could find these stones. Who's going to have like diamond and I don't even know how to pronounce some of these names, Jacin, J-A-C-I-N-N-T-H, and all these little things like the turquoise and the calf's eye and all that stuff. Who's going to have that in the middle of the desert? They didn't. The Nisim were Zocha, that the clouds came by and brought the stones over to their front yard, and they took those stones and they gave them over, right, to the people that were in charge of the Mishkan. They were able to give them over. That's what the Nisim did. That was their donation. So I don't understand. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu did that with a bunch of stones, why couldn't he have done that with everything? Why do you need donations for the big day kuna gedola? Why not have, I don't know, just have linen and wool and golden strands and everything like that just fall down from Shemayim? Hey, I'll just ask a different question. Why not have the begadim fall down from Shemayim? Why did it need to be donated by Klal Yisrael and then made by Klal Yisrael? What was the point of that? Why not just make it that way? And don't tell me, well, we never see that anywhere. The menorah was made by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. They took a massive thing of gold, put it in the oven, out came the menorah. So made the menorah with all its, you know, all the little intricacies and everything like that. He made the menorah. When it came to donations, HaKadosh Baruch Hu donated, so to speak, the stones. Some say he donated the shemen as well. All the oil fell down from Shemayim and fell down in Moshe Rabbeinu's front steps, right in front of his tent. I don't understand. Why not let everything come down there? What's the point in having a donation? So here's the idea. Kohanim, Kohanim work through love. That's what their service is. Their service is unlike a Levi, right? Unlike a Levi, it's a different type of service where a Kohen works through love of Klal Yisrael. Where a Kohen, have you ever seen the halakha, Birchas Kohanim? If the Kohen is despised by the Tzibor, I want to say vice versa, but let's say the Kohen despises the Tzibor despises the Kohen, he can't do Birchas Kohanim. Because that goes against every fabric of what that Kohen stands for. Kohanim all come from Aaron, who is an Oed Shalom and a Rodeh Shalom, which means he all worked through love. There has to be connection from Bnei Yisrael to the Kohanim. What do you do with the Korbanos? You give it over to the Kohen, and you trust him with it. Don't have any bad thoughts when you sacrifice this Korban for me. You're giving it over to him. There has to be a connection between Klal Yisrael and the Kohanim. There has to be a love that connects the two of them, that brings them closer to one another. So over here, that's the reason why there have to be donations. Bnei Yisrael have to show their love for the Kohanim. So what did they do? They donated the clothes. And the Kohanim wore their clothes in front of the people to show them, we love what you got us. We appreciate everything you did for us. And the people would look at the Kohanim and say, we donated that. That was what we gave over to that person. That's what we had over there. You don't really find it that way anymore, but that's the way Sfardim are, when Sfardim give donations to the shul. Have you ever seen them? Like they give it over, like, oh, the chair that I paid for, they're willing to pay anything for it. To be able to give the Rav something that the Rav can use, something the Rav has, it's huge. It's absolutely, exactly. Meaning literally, they'll give him anything he needs. Absolutely anything. And it's their pleasure. They mamash feel it. It's not like, you know, like, oh, if I have to, I guess I'll give. It's that they want to give because they feel like there's a connection now between me and the Rav. There's a real connection. And that's the idea behind, no, it's a little bit different by us. I'm sure there are people that feel this way, even by us. But that's the idea. That love completes the service, and that's why it has to be donated. Okay, we all know the Urim and Tumim, right? It's called the Urim, and then the Tumim. Why is it called the Urim and the Tumim? So Rashi explains, and the Ramban really goes on a little bit. Urim the Tumim was, in fact, remember, the Choshen guy was a little square thing. This isn't exactly square, but around this, was a little square thing that went right there, right? Attached by gold chains on all four sides. That was It was a little square thing. It was a piece of beged made of all the gold and the techelet and the argaman and the sheish and the tolas shani that was made over there. On front of it, there were settings, right? All the arvirs make it like that. 12 settings, 4 sets going down of 3 each, 12 settings altogether. And on the stones, we all know those are the stones of the choshen. It had all the names of the shvatim, the names of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, etc. That's what it was supposed to be. Inside the choshen, it was a folded up beged. Inside there were 2 little klapim. On those klapim were 2 names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One was the name of Hashem known as the Urim, and one was the name of Hashem known as the Tumim. When the Kohen Gadol wanted to do something, figure out something, know something, he would sit there and he'd have the Choshen right there and he'd concentrate on the name of the Urim. He would ask the question, or whatever it was, he would ask the question, and the Kohen Gadol would have a concentration, he would think of the name of the Urim. Whatever name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu the Urim was, he would think of the Urim and the letters would light up. But they wouldn't be in order. In order to get them in order and to know what to do, he needed the Tumim, which is another name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that allowed him to be able to put it together. So it was 2 shemos, the Urim and the Tumim. The Urim lit up the letters. The Tumim put the letters together. The famous example of a mistake that was made was Eli HaKohen. Remember when Chana was davening? Chana was davening by the Mishkan and she sounded like, and Eli looked at her and thought she was drunk. Thought she was drunk, is because he asked the question of the Urim Tumim and said, what's up with this woman? I'm pretty sure those are the exact words, right? And he looked down, really, and the following letters came up. Shin, from Shimon. Chaf, from Yisachar. Resh, from Yisachar. And a Hey, from, I don't know, pick one.
Harriet.
Avraham. Let's just say Avraham. From the Hey over there. So it's Shin, Chaf, Resh, Hey, which he thought spelled Shikora, which meant drunkard. So he didn't even bother using the Tumim because it just happened. Said Chana, you're wrong. You messed up in this, Eli. Had you used the Tumim, the letters would have flown out in front of your face and lit up in front of you and been Chof, Shin, Resh, Hey, which would have stood for Kshera. And that's what it would have been. That's what the Urim and the Tumim was. See here. The problem is that there's also something called the Tumecha, the Urecha, the Ish Chasidecha. When do we say that guy? Tumecha v'urecha le'ish chasidecha. Your Tumim and your Urim for your man of chesed. Very good. As we say in Vizos HaBracha, when we lay in Vizos HaBracha, Tumecha v'urecha le'ish chasidecha is mentioned by the bracha of Levi. Why was it written that way? So there's an unbelievable Chassam Sofer over here. He doesn't fully answer the question, right, why the Tumim comes first, but an unbelievable Chassam Sofer brings down the Ibn Ezra. The real answer to the question as to why the Urim comes before the Tumim comes before the Urim, is that some Kohanim were such big tzaddikim, they could get the Tumim on their own, and they didn't need the Urim. They were able to just have Tumim in their head, and they were able to figure things out. Most people needed to build themselves up to Urim and then Tumim. A man of Chesed, like Aaron HaKohen, could do the Tumecha, doesn't even need the Urim. The Urim is automatic. But Ibn Ezra says an unbelievable thing. Ibn Ezra says all this happened through the powers of astrology. And therefore, 85 Kohanim wore special linen ephodim, as it says in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chaf Beis. And therefore, all of this, all the Choshen, and everything that Urim and Tumim worked for, was working through powers of astrology. Powers of astrology. That's the Ibn Ezra's opinion. He goes on about it. There's some unbelievable things. It seems that the Ibn Ezra himself knew what he was talking about. Meaning, he said, like, yeah, it's a very obvious Chokmah. Very obvious
Chokmah.
Not astrology. Remember, astrology originally was invented by Avraham Avinu. The real astrology was from Avraham Avinu. Yeah. It was used, unfortunately, in tummy ways by the other people who he taught it to, who used it in the East and in Mitzrayim. The real astrology, the real stuff, was taken by Avraham Avinu. Am I right, by the way? I think astronomy is a study of stars, and astrology is the Chokhmah, right? I'm right about that. Because that's that. So that's the idea. But the Chassam Sofer says, the Ramban yells at him for it. The Ramban says, what the heck? That's really the line of the Ramban. Like, what do you mean? Like, of course it's not working that way. Of course it's working through Kiddusha and through all these types of Kaddush ways. Of course that's the way. But the question is, then, if it was really through astrology, and it seems that Ibn Ezra knew what it was, why was there no Urim Tumim in Bayis Sheni? In Nehemiah, in Zion Hay, Perek Zion Pasuk Hay, Nehemiah says, I couldn't find anyone who knew how to use the Urim and Tumim. What do you mean you didn't know how to use the Urim? If it's Shemos of Hashem, I understand you had nobody who could concentrate on those Shemos. You didn't know what Shemos to use. I understand that. If it's not Shemos, if it's astrology, then if the Ibn Ezra knew what it was, then why wouldn't you know what it was? I don't understand. What would it be? So the answer is that you're right. The Ibn Ezra knew what it was, but he only knew it from the other nations of the world who taught to him. So it was coming through Tumah. So he didn't want to use it. So instead, he was saying there was a Chachma back then that was through Kedusha. No one in the second base of Mikdash knew it through Kedusha. They only knew it from their astrology classes that they took when they were in school in Babel. And because of that, they couldn't use it. So they knew it, but they didn't want to use it because it was coming through the other way. Truth is, says Chassam Sofer, there definitely is a wisdom through the stars. But the truth is that it's like a lottery. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Hulin Sadiheh said they lie sometimes. The stars can lie. But the Urim and the Tumim contain the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That doesn't lie. Sometimes the Kohanim wearing these special clothing, they were Mechavim to this and they were able to get there. But not always. If, those are the 85 Kohanim, that's if they knew this Chokhmah of astrology, then they were able to get it. But never, it was never like the Urim and Tumim. The Urim and Tumim was a perfect science, so to speak, that worked through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we all know, guys, the Rosh says it in the back of the Chumash. The last time the Urim and Tumim worked was by
some war.
David HaMelech. We had never used the Urim and Tumim since then. And the ride of that, it's a Gemara in Gittin that Shlomo HaMelech wanted to build the base of Mikdash and had no idea how to make the stones and make the stones engraved without using a metal instrument. What can I do in order to engrave it? So he was told to use a shamir worm. He said, where's the shamir worm? They told him demons, right? And he went to go find the demons. They said, look at Ashmadai. Ashmadai told him to go to the Sar Shalyam. He went all over. Why didn't he just ask the Urim and Tumim? Why couldn't he ask the Urim and Tumim? Says the Rosh, you see from there, the Urim and Tumim stopped working by David HaMelech. Nobody from David HaMelech on was able to figure out how to use it. He was the last one to abuse it for all time. Is that unbelievable? That's such an unbelievable word. But that's the idea behind the Urim and Tumim. So again, that was that. So our summary and what we went into today, we number one went into the menorah, how the menorah represents the Torah, and there were Gidarim, Siyagim, and that oil lit up in the menorah was the Gidarim and the Siyagim, being able to make it much, much greater. Our second idea is the difference between Harkava and Havracha. That we're allowed to graft, we're allowed to take something and put it in the ground, but we're not allowed to do Harkava, which is, I might be using the word incorrectly, maybe it's not grafting, maybe it's something else. But you can do Havracha. You can't do our kavod. We can't mix in with the nations of the world, but we can influence and affect the other nations of the world. That's the idea behind it. Then we said the Big Tikkun, that the only way the Big Tikkun worked was through donations to connect the Jews with the Kohanim. And our final idea over here was how the Urim and Tumim worked. That the Urim and Tumim worked in a kadosh way, and for the Ibn Ezra has an unbelievable answer that it works in some other type of way. And that goes through the entire parsha. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbat.